Welcome to Passy Muir's CAM podcast, Conversations on Aerodigestive Management. This episode of CAM features your host, Dr. Kristen King, as part of a guest panel of Passy Muir clinical specialists, having a conversation on common questions about ventilator application of the Passy Muir valve.
Welcome again, everyone, for those of you joining us for this episode of Conversations on Aerodigestive Management, the CAM podcast. Today, I have with me again a panel of clinicians so that we can talk to you about ventilator application. If you tuned into our last episode, we touched on the differences between the valves, cleaning the valves, and working with patients who are not on a ventilator. And in this episode, we're going to focus on ventilator application and use of the valve, including some strategies and possibly some troubleshooting. We're focused on the questions that we hear a lot from people who call in or write in to us who have questions about their practice or are wanting to clarify how to work with these patients. So that's what we're going to address today. And I have with me on the panel again, Rachel O'Hare, a registered respiratory therapist, Carmen Barto, speech-language pathologist, Tiffany Oakes, speech-language pathologist, and of course myself, Kristen King, also a speech-language pathologist. Welcome, everyone.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining.
One of the questions that we get a lot that I want to start us off with, we often get asked or get, I guess, told by some speech-language pathologists that in their facility, they will hear from the respiratory therapist that their ventilators are not compatible with the Passy Muir valve or that they cannot use their valve with the ventilators that they have. So I want to talk about that first, Rachel. Is that true?
Kristen, that is not true. Mechanical ventilation is the same regardless of which machine you're using. It is all positive pressure ventilation. The difference between each machine is how it measures and interprets. And, you know, sometimes the names of things are different from machine to machine, but the basic principles of mechanical ventilation apply regardless of what ventilator you are using. And so those with those principles, you absolutely can place that valve in line with mechanical ventilation, regardless of which machine you are using.
So what would be a difference between ventilators that might actually impact how you're using the valve?
I would say the differences that can impact is some of the alarms and how the vent is interpreting some of the measurements, because when we're placing that valve in line, we have no expiratory volume coming back through that circuit. And most ventilators do rely on measuring what's going into the patient, your inhaled volume, as well as that exhaled volume. So there can be a little bit tricky managing those vents. Each vent, you know, has a little bit of different things going on there. So managing that exhalation side varies from vent to vent. So setting alarms appropriately, adjusting certain settings or background menus and things of that nature to help you place that valve so it's not constantly alarming or making noise.
What about NIV mode? Do all ventilators have NIV mode? That we get asked about that sometimes.
Unfortunately, no, they do not. I wish that every single ventilator does. A lot more do. I started respiratory care 19 years ago, and we didn't have non-invasive mode available on our invasive ventilators at that time. But since then, ventilator companies have learned that we want to be able to use one device interchangeably. So they've added that capability, and it does make it a lot easier. So there are many of the major vents that you'll see in the ICU. Those have the capability to switch to a non-invasive ventilation mode. It varies from ventilator to ventilator. Most of them have that capability now. If you're using an older generation, maybe not, but a lot of has changed and advanced in that area.
What's recently. The advantage of having NIV with Passy Muir valve use?
As I said earlier, when we're talking mechanical ventilation is just positive pressure ventilation, which means we're essentially pushing air into the lungs. And that doesn't change whether it's invasive or non-invasive. The difference between invasive ventilation and non-invasive ventilation is invasive ventilation relies on having a sealed system. That's why we typically have that cuffed tube so that we have that inflated cuff. It seals the airway. And that's what directs the airflow from the ventilator into the lungs. And it also ensures that all of our patients' inspiratory and expiratory volume is moving through that tube. So invasive ventilator likes to have that seal, but when we're placing the valve, we're breaking that seal, and which means we're introducing a very big leak into our system. And that confuses your machine. It doesn't really know how to manage a really large leak. And so when we're switching to the non-invasive mode of ventilation, essentially what we're telling the machine is now I'm operating in a leaking system. Because non-invasive ventilation, if we're using it with a mask or a cannula or some other device, is never fully sealed. So we always have a leak occurring during that time. And so the vent is more adept to managing, measuring, and compensating with that leak in the non-invasive mode than it is in the invasive mode.
If we're looking at using the valve in line with our patients, or, you know, trying to get that started in our facility. Another question that's come up pretty frequently is that question of if they're on the ventilator, but they're being weaned, or they're doing sprinting trials, you know, they're doing sprints off the ventilator. Do you need to wait until sprinting or being weaned is finished and wait till they're off the ventilator in order to use the valve?
Absolutely not. In fact, placing the valve can help with the sprints, especially when you're taking them off the ventilator. A lot of times when we're sprinting on the vent, we still have some pressure support and we still have some PEEP present to assist our patients with that lung recruitment and keeping the alveoli open. But when we go from that sprint on the vent to the off the vent sprint where you're using a tray collar or a T-piece, we don't have that PEEP present and we don't have any pressure support or anything present to assist our patients breathing, which means it can impact recruitment of the alveoli or the inflation of the alveoli, which is what we call PEEP. And so you really got to think about it naturally when we're breathing off a ventilator without an artificial airway. We typically have what we call physiologic PEEP. And this physiologic PEEP is created when we exhale through the upper airway. An exhalation through that upper airway creates resistance to the expiratory volume, which then creates that back lower back pressure, stenting the alveoli open. Well, when you take your patient and you have them on a tracheostomy tube and you have them breathing in and out through that tube, they don't have that same resistance to that expiratory volume. That tube does not provide that resistance. So in other words, their physiologic PEEP isn't present. So they don't have that same recruitment that they may have when you have the valve. So when we're placing the valve, we're restoring that natural pathway for exhalation, which means we're restoring the natural resistance to the expiratory volume, which gives your patients that physiologic PEEP. And having that PEEP and that lung recruitment present can really help your patients maintain off the ventilator a little bit longer than they normally would.
I'll jump in a little bit too when just talking about, you know, using valves in line with the ventilator, and maybe we can chat for just a little bit about patient readiness. I know that's a question that we get a lot, maybe especially for clinicians that don't have a robust inline valve program quite yet. And you're like, well, how do we even get started with this? And let's talk about patient readiness. I think Rachel covered so much about mechanical ventilation and the NIV and invasive modes of ventilation. And we can really think about patient readiness being any of those modes are okay. So you can have a patient in CMV or assist control mode. You could have a patient in SIMV. You could have a patient in pressure support and CPAP. Any of those modes of ventilation are absolutely appropriate for cuff deflation and valve placement assessment. So we do have some certain parameters that we suggest that maybe in just a minute, Rachel, you can go over some of those vent parameters, but I'll talk for just a minute about patient parameters. You want to think about a patient who's medically stable. So you're thinking about those patients that are maintaining their oxygenation, that have stable respiratory rate, heart rate. You know, if you walk into the room and maybe the patient is experiencing bradycardia or tachypnea, or they're having difficulty maintaining their oxygenation, and the respiratory therapist is having to go up on their FiO2 to maintain good oxygenation, all of those might indicate medical instability and maybe a patient that's not quite ready for cuff deflation and valve placement. But as long as the patient is I always say awake-ish and alert-ish, meaning you don't have to have a patient who is completely cognitively intact, but they do need to be able to participate with you somewhat. So, awake-ish, alert-ish, and medically stable, those are big ones. And then, of course, there's some ventilator-specific criteria as well. So, Rachel, I can pass that those specific suggestions or guidelines back to you.
Yeah, definitely. When we're assessing our patients on a ventilator, there are three primary modes of ventilation, and these are the modes that are used most often. And I promise you, every ventilator has all three. If you guys find one that doesn't, definitely email us and let us know. I have yet to find one that does not have all three modes. But Carmen mentioned them. Those modes are called CMV, which is also called assist control. That's the same mode, but just a different name. Then we have SIMV, and then you have spontaneous, which is called CPAP, or sometimes pressure support, as Carmen mentioned. Ideally, you want to see your patients in one of those three modes, okay? Those three modes work best with valve placement. But then once we've determined they're in that mode, we also have to ensure that they're stable within that mode. So we have to assess the parameters or the settings that we've inputted into our ventilator. So we're looking at their FiO2, which we want to see less than 50%. We want to see that their PEEP is less than 10 and that peak inspiratory pressure is less than 40. Okay. And I like to just highlight that peak inspiratory pressure just a bit. Just so you all are aware, peak inspiratory pressure is the max amount of pressure it takes to inflate the lungs. And sometimes when our patients are sick, their lungs can become stiff or non-compliant, and or we may have a greater amount of airway resistance, which means it requires a greater amount of pressure to get the flow from the ventilator into the lungs. When we're deflating the cuff, we are creating less resistance to flow, which means that flow is going to take the path of least resistance. And if your lungs are stiff and non-compliant, that path is not going to be down into the lungs where we need it to go. So the higher your peak inspiratory pressure is, the more challenging it will be to ventilate with your cuff deflated. So always keep that in mind.
One of the phrases we use sometimes in our courses is the higher the pressure, the sicker the lung.
It's a very good phrase. It's a very good way to put it.
For so sure. Just to kind of tag on to what you're saying about that higher pressure and why it's an indicator to be aware of. Rachel, let's touch base also on some of the settings that we see with these patients. What about the PEEP and the respiratory rate and other settings like that you may have on the ventilator? What do we need to be aware of?
There's several things to consider. We'll start with respiratory rate if you just kind of overview that. When you have your patient on a ventilator, we typically have a set respiratory rate. This is a mandatory breath rate when your patient is in SIMV or your CMV, which is often called assist control. In those two modes, you will have that mandatory breath rate. And what that basically means is the vent is going to deliver a set amount of breaths per minute. And we tell that vent how many breaths to give. So say, for example, I set that rate at 10. That means every 6 seconds, that ventilator is going to deliver a breath to my patient. And that's regardless of what your patient's doing. So the respiratory rate, you do want to keep that in mind, but we don't have any specific guidelines here. But when we're working with our patients and trying to get them used to speaking with a ventilator, you have to remember the flow does feel very different. We've reintroduced that airflow back into the upper airway. It's a very big leak. So there's a continuous flow kind of moving through that upper airway. So it's very tempting for your patients to speak or continually speak when they're supposed to be inhaling or when that vent is scheduled to deliver that mandatory breath. So some of the things that you can do to help your patients with that is, if possible, turn that mandatory breath rate down, allow them to have more of their own spontaneous breaths. Because if you notice, as I'm talking, I take a breath in, I say a very long sentence, and then I breathe when I want to. And so when you take that mandatory breath rate down, your patient can do the same. The other thing you can do is kind of work with your patient. If you can't turn that respiratory rate down, is work with your patient on the coordination and timing of those mandatory breaths and when they're coming, and get them used to kind of getting that feel for when that breath is coming so that they can take that breath in and then speak on that exhalation phase only. It's important to have our patients speaking during exhalation only, because because if they're talking during inhalation, that means that volume is not reaching the lungs like we need it to. And over time, that can impact your patient's pH and CO2 levels. And so we really don't want to see that. We want to get them used to speaking on exhalation only.
Rachel, sometimes a question that we get is regarding the eye time when talking about that speaking on exhalation, that coordination, making sure that we've got good timing on those breaths. Is there something that can be done to the eye time? Because that is something I used to ask respiratory about. I feel like that's a question we get. Is there some kind of adjustment that maybe could be made to help with that a little bit? What does that eye time even mean? And what's that doing for the patient when we're looking at those adjustments?
That's a great question, Tiffany. When we're talking about eye time, that's the amount of time the patient will spend in inhalation, okay? It's the inspiratory time. It's how much time the vent is going to deliver volume to the lungs before we cycle to our exhalation phase. And so typically for the adult patient, we like to see that eye time around 1 second. But one of the things we also look at is our I to E ratio. That's the inspiratory time to our expiratory time ratio. And typically, ideally, not always, it's usually a 1:2 to 1:3 ratio. So we want, you know, 2 to 3 times as long for exhalation as we have for inhalation. And so the way you can adjust that particular ratio is sometimes decreasing that eye time a little bit. You know, as I said, the adult patient is around 1 second, but sometimes we're doing it at like 0.75 seconds or, you know, 1 second could go to 1.2 seconds, just depending on what the patient needs and how well we can, you know, get that vent in sync with our patients. But if you want to create longer periods of time for them to speak, which is speaking on that exhalation phase, you just would decrease that eye time a little bit so they can get that breath in a little bit faster and have more time during that exhalation phase to continually speak.
What do you think is the easiest mode? Like if we have some people that are out listening and they haven't done this before and they're like, okay, we're going to tiptoe into the ICU and try to make this happen. Give me maybe a couple of maybe vent patient parameters that might be a good place to get started with this.
If I had to select the easiest mode for valve placement, it would be your spontaneous CPAP, what it's sometimes called pressure support mode. And that's because in that particular mode, our patient's in the driver's seat. They're in complete control over their breathing. They have to breathe what we call spontaneously. They're initiating all of their breaths on their own. And in that particular mode, we don't have any set tidal volume. We don't have any set inspiratory pressure, and we don't have any set respiratory rate or frequency. All of that is controlled by the patient, which means they can take that breath in, get as much volume as they need or as much as they want, and then continually talk until they need their next breath. So it does make it a little bit easier. There's no interruptions based on, you know, mandatory breaths or anything coming into play. So that would be my first, you know, choice there, just because your patient can control. It's like you and I are talking right now. I'm talking, I have long sentence. I need a breath. I take a breath and I keep going. So same thing with your patients, same basic approach with that. But again, we have some of those patients out there that may not be able to be in a spontaneous mode or a CPAP mode. They still require those mandatory breath rights. And patients typically with some neurological deficit or spinal cord injuries are, you know, patients who would have a mandatory breath rate. And so my next choice would be SIMV, because SIMV gives more leeway to the patient as well. We have the mandatory breath rate, but when the patient takes their spontaneous breath, we're supporting them with pressure support. Pressure support is just basically when the patient pulls the breath from the vent responds by pushing the air in. And we tell the vent how much to push based on the setting that we have on that pressure support. So in this mode, you have the mandatory breath where we have, you know, that set frequency, we either have a set tidal volume or we have the set inspiratory pressure, but then when they start to breathe on their own, they have that leeway to take as big a breath as they want, spend as much time in inhalation as they want and get the volume that they need. So they have a little more play to have that leeway to speak. In addition to that, SIMV is called synchronized intermittent mandatory ventilation. So it's synchronizing with the patient, meaning that if the patient's mandatory breath is scheduled to be delivered at the same time the patient is initiating their own breath, the vent gives leeway to the patient's spontaneous breath. So they have a little more flexibility there. So those would be my, you know, choice 1 and 2 for placing the valve in line.
I think one thing you said that made me think about what we can do as speech pathologists, sometimes we have to work with the patient to actually train them to recognize, and you said this earlier, I'm just kind of reinforcing it, that we have to work with the patient to recognize when the ventilator is giving them an inspiratory breath versus when they're on exhalation and coordinate with the ventilator for their speech, so they're not speaking on inspiration. So from what you're saying, those modes are a little easier because the patient controls it and they're not having to learn the vent, I guess you could say, quite as much.
Absolutely. Yeah. You have a little more leeway there for sure.
One question we get a lot that I want to address from a research standpoint, and then I'll let all of you throw in what you want to throw in about it, is adjusting PEEP. Most patients who are on the ventilator, there's some, you know, PEEP is set at some number, whether it's 5, 3, 5, 8, 10, 12. We hear different numbers depending on what the patient's needs are. And sometimes that PEEP needs to be turned down, which I'll let you address that in a minute, Rachel, or why we might adjust the PEEP. But I will share that there's research published that supports adjusting the PEEP. And if anyone's interested, Annalisa Soot and colleagues published a number of studies in 2015, 16, 17, and 18, where they were looking at patients in a cardiothoracic ICU and using the valve in line. And they actually found that they needed to turn the PEEP, and they actually did in their study, turn the PEEP down by 5. So they didn't turn it off. If a patient was on 10, they adjusted them down to 5. If they were 5, it went to 0. But they turned the PEEP down by 5 because they found that by placing the valve in line and closing that system and restoring the use of the upper airway, they were restoring the more normal physiologic PEEP, and the patients were actually showing increased lung recruitment and improved ventilation of the alveoli. And they actually measured that with electrical impedance tomography and looked at lung volumes and actually found an improvement in lung volumes and lung recruitment with the valve in line and the PEEP turned down. And so when they published that research, they suggested that consideration for turning PEEP down. What comments do y'all have on that? Because we get a lot of questions about, should we turn the PEEP down? Can we turn the PEEP down? You know, those kind of questions come in.
Kristen, I think you did a great job explaining kind of what physiologic PEEP is and why we would do that. But, you know, I think that even though the passing mirror valve was developed back in the 1980s to be used in line with the ventilator, I think we still get resistance and we still get questions and there's still some hesitation. And I think that paper, those Annalisa Soot articles are some excellent resources to share with the ICU staff to say, hey, you know, this is not only possible, this not only helps our patients to communicate, which I'll throw in is also a joint commission requirement, an ADA requirement. I mean, there's so many quality of life reasons that we should be in there, as well as regulatory, legal reasons. But I, you know, so I think sometimes sharing some of that research, some of that information to help maybe quote unquote convince the ICU teams that this is not just something the speech pathologist wants to do to help the patient talk, which is pretty darn important in and of itself, but it also may help your patient breathe better. It may help your patient wean. There's some good weaning research too. So I think just, you know, getting familiar with some of that research that's out there and sharing it with your medical teams might be one way to really advocate for these patients.
And as an SLP, knowing that I can't adjust the PEEP, I can't touch that vent, but it's good to be aware of that set PEEP and also maybe what's going on if that PEEP has not been adjusted. It may look like once you get the valve in line that the patient is kind of anxious. It may look like the patient's taking some of these quick, shallow breaths because of that PEEP setting, or it may sound, for lack of a better word, gushy. You may hear some of that airflow a little bit, and just maybe being aware of that and seeing that maybe that adjustment could help may help the patient as well.
Rachel, what is it that makes it look like they're breathing faster or anxious?
What can really help you guys when you're working with your team, if you have some resistance on turning down the PEEP, is helping, you know, your RTs and pulmonologists and physicians understand what's really happening with the ventilator when we're using PEEP. So PEEP, as we've stated before, is positive end expiratory pressure. And so the vent generates this pressure by creating some resistance to the expiratory volume of our patients. And most of the time, that resistance is created by some additional flow. And that additional flow is in the circuit. So when the patient exhales against that flow, that's what creates a backflow or back pressure, which stents the alveoli open. When we have our PEEP on, essentially what you're doing is having additional flow in that circuit. And when we're placing a valve in line, we have none of the patient's expiratory volume coming back through that circuit. All of their exhale volume is moving through the upper airway, which means that additional flow is just there hanging out. And it can do things like cause auto-cycling or auto-triggering, or sometimes even a turbulent flow within the airway. Those are all very important things. And the other thing to remember when we're setting PEEP, yes, it's a setting, but it's also a measurement. So the vent is constantly measuring how much pressure that flow that it's added to the circuit is creating and adjusting that flow accordingly. So when we don't have any expiratory flow meeting that resistance and there's no PEEP, essentially it's not reading any measurement there, it's starting to adjust the flow to try and correct that. So all of those things combined cause what we call an auto cycle or an auto trigger. Auto cycling or auto triggering is the vent sensing that additional flow and delivering breaths to the patient, even though the patient's not initiating them or it's not time for their mandatory breath. So it looks like the patient starts breathing faster when in reality, it's just the vent delivering more and more breaths. So that's one of the things to look out for that can be very problematic. In addition to that, one of the things you could also see is that flow that's just kind of hanging out there, trying to adjust, trying to create that resistance can cause a turbulent flow. And that turbulent flow can be very irritating in the back of the airway, and that can cause your patient to cough. So if you notice your patient is just coughing and coughing and coughing and coughing and coughing and coughing and nothing you do seems to help them, more than likely it is that additional flow creating that turbulent flow. And that may mean that you need to turn your PEEP down further. Just some things to keep in mind is that PEEP is just additional flow. And when we're telling you to turn that PEEP down, essentially we're just saying, turn down that additional flow so that it can make it a little bit easier for your patient to manage when we're reintroducing that airflow back into the upper airway.
Rachel, thank you for explaining the clinical side of the PEEP. And when, after I shared the research side, and Carmen, your support of using research, because I think that hopefully that helped to clarify that a little bit for our listeners. And the last question, we don't have a lot of time left, but the last question I want to touch on is we get asked all the time, what therapy do I do for the valve? And so I want us to address that because this will kind of come, this actually covers whether a patient's on the vent or off the vent, but we'll stick a little bit to ventilator application, but still, what therapy do you do for the valve, Tiffany?
So there is no therapy for the valve. So the valve is DME. It is an equipment. So once you have the valve in place, in line, or at the trach tube hub, we are going to be treating the patient for whatever their deficits are. The therapy is going to be for whatever the patient needs to work on. Once you have the valve in place, now focus on the patient's deficits. Is that dysphagia? Do we need to work on voice? Is it respiratory support for speech? Is it cognition or language or motor speech? Once we've closed the system, then we can treat the patient for whatever it is that the patient needs.
Tiffany, I like what you said about, you know, that there's no therapy for the valve itself, kind of determining what's going on with the patient. And I think what falls in line with that too, is sometimes our patients don't do very well with it initially. We have to troubleshoot what's going on. Carmen, do you have some thoughts on troubleshooting?
You know, I think a lot of our troubleshooting for inline ventilator application is very, very similar to troubleshooting when the patient is not on the ventilator. You know, you have to ensure complete cuff deflation. You have to ensure adequate airflow around that trach through the upper airway. So you have to have adequate airway patency. Those are the biggest things to consider. And so just like, you know, if your patient's on the ventilator, you still have to think about those things. And then I know Rachel beautifully covered a lot of the considerations for alarm management and ventilator adjustments. You know, putting the valve in line with the ventilator, it is does require a little more critical thinking, and it definitely requires great teamwork between speech pathology and respiratory therapy. but in many, many cases, it can absolutely be successful, and we know it can make a huge difference in our patients' lives.
I'm going to bring in the research support again here from what you just said, because research shows what you just said. Teamwork is beneficial. The research shows that using the valve earlier with patients actually helps to wean them faster from the ventilator. They sometimes have shorter lengths of stay in the ICU because they're weaned faster. And there's been even a couple of publications that talk about cost savings because of that shortened time. We're looking at, you know, kind of this holistic view that you've got benefits for the patient, you've got benefits for the team and the facility just because of how it may help in the care of that patient. You know, if it improves secretion management, we restore cough and throat clear. You know, there's research to support why you want to get involved earlier. And so I just wanted to share that there is research support for what we've been saying. Does anybody have any last thoughts or tidbits that they want to share?
I'll just jump in. Just when you were talking, it made me think of one way that where I worked for many, many, many years with this patient population, we really tried to think about our patients in the ICU who had trachs and were mechanically ventilated as any other patient in the hospital with a communication and swallowing impairment. And those patients deserved our intervention as much as, you know, your patients on the step down units without trachs and without valves. And so, you know, we just tried really hard to think about those patients deserve assessments. We need to get those referrals. We need to be advocating for those patients, just like any other patient in the hospital.
Amy Freeman Sanderson and colleagues have done a lot of research looking at these patients in ICU with trachs and vents, and have found and published several studies from like 2016 to now, where they have found that there's psychological benefit. So it's not just the things we've been talking about, but patients who have a loss of voice in the ICU and are not getting those interventions, demonstrating more anxiety, more anger, frustration. It could potentially have an impact on like ICU delirium. What the research has shown is intervening sooner actually helps with that overall psychological mental state of the patients in the ICU too. Well, thank you everyone for joining me on the panel, and for all of the listeners who are listening in, hopefully you have some tidbits to take away, some little nuggets of information that you can use in the care of your patients when it comes to inline mechanical ventilation and use of the valve. Please feel free to contact us anytime if you have a question. That's what we're here for. Part of the role of this panel is to answer questions. And so anytime you have a question, you can email info@passymuir.com or call 949-883-8255 if you have questions. Thank you again for joining in, and take care.
Thank you for listening to this episode of CAM. We are happy to offer continuing education credit through ASHA for this podcast. To receive credit, please go to www.passymuir.com/podcast and click on the continuing education link under this episode. Then you will either create an account or log into your existing education portal account. Complete the quiz and course evaluation for your podcast episode. Your certificate will be available for download once completed.